Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by HelloFresh.com, the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting the Campfire. Receive $35 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CAMPFIRE when you subscribe. We'll tell you more in a bit. And thanks, HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the Campfire. I'm Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. If you're new to the Campfire, welcome. This is where we have real people tell their true ghost stories and stories of the supernatural. Not just ghosts, strange dreams, premonitions, UFOs, Bigfoot. Well, anyway, you know what I mean. But I got to tell you, this week we have some great stories, and we're going to kick it off with what is now one of my favorite all-time campfire stories. Absolutely love it. I think you will too. And this is a fun show this week. I hope that you enjoy it. And here it is. Here is the Campfire. Dave from Louisiana is on the line. He's been listening for just about a month and a half, found us on the podcasts app on the iPhone. And Dave has truly one of the most unique campfire stories I have ever heard. I'm not even going to try to intro this. I might ruin it. And folks, hold on to your hats. This is fantastic. Dave, welcome to the program. And please share this story. I love it.
Oh, good. I'm glad you love it. Thanks for having me on. This is a story about a couple of dreams. The first one happened a long time ago, in around 1959. When I was a baby, I was born in May of 58, and when I was just pre-toddler age, apparently I was able to crawl out through the bars of my crib. I had a crib with wide bars, and I guess I was that age where I could crawl around a lot and stand up by holding things, but really wasn't walking yet. But apparently, then as now, I was a night owl, and my parents would find me in different parts of the house asleep, maybe on the couch in the living room, on the floor in the hallway. So that was a fairly common thing for me to go wandering in the middle of the night when I was little. And one night my mom was sleeping, and her bed was shaking. And she opened her eyes, and there was a man standing at the foot of her bed, mm-hmm. a tall man with shoulder-length, curly, blonde hair, which was kind of strange for 1959.
Sure.
The only people in pirate movies and biblical movies had long hair back then. So he said, "Mom, it's Dave. You need to wake up right now and go in the bathroom. I'm 30 years old, but if you don't wake up and go in the bathroom, I'll never make it to 30. And she suddenly woke up with this horrible feeling of a panic and jumped up and ran in the bathroom. And apparently I had gotten into her prescription thyroid medicine
and
eaten a bunch of it. Yeah. So they rushed me to the emergency room. My stomach was pumped and I was fine. So this was a story that my mom often told, especially around Thanksgiving, because she was thankful, you know, that she had this dream. And we always had kind of a real strong psychic connection, my mom and me. Well, a couple of weird things about the story, about the dream, were that the guy had long hair and that he went by the name Dave. No one called me Dave until after I was out of college and I had moved to California. And everybody there called me Dave. It just kind of stuck, and I kept it, you know, but by the time I was 30, I was calling myself Dave. My parents still called me David, though. And I also, when I was 30, I had long hair at that time. So it was kind of a cool thing, you know. She would always talk about the dream that saved my life. Well, when I was 30, sometime around Thanksgiving time, and that's why I say that one of these dreams is truly amazing, and the other one may or may not have been a product of the suggestion of having heard that story so many times from my mom. But I had a dream that I was riding this old bicycle, like a one of those clunky old radio flyer kind of bicycles with the big fat tires at one speed with the foot brake and everything. And I was hot and tired, and I realized that we were in Baton Rouge, in the city that, in the neighborhood that we lived in when I was little. And so I turned a road and went down the street to where our old house was, and I left the bike in the driveway, and I went inside to get a drink of water. And the kitchen sink faucet didn't work. So I thought, well, I'm going to go in the bathroom. And so as I walked into the bathroom with the empty glass, I almost tripped on this baby laying there on the floor. And that's when it all kind of clicked in my head. I've got to go warn my mom. That's me. Wow. So I immediately went into my mom's bedroom, and I shook her bed with my knees, and she woke up. And I said, "Mom, it's Dave. I'm 30 years old, but I'll never make it to 30 if you don't wake up right now and go in the bathroom." And suddenly I woke up.
And I bet you had that long hair, didn't you, when you were 30?
I did. Yeah. I was I'm a musician part-time. And at the time I was a musician full-time pretty much. And yeah, I had shoulder length blonde hair then.
So essentially what seems to have happened, let's take, if the suggestion wasn't the reason for the second dream, what basically your dream, basically what seems to have happened here possibly is that 30-year-old Dave came back to warn mom that baby David had taken these pills and needed to be attended to.
Right.
Wow. I love that story. The second story was part of suggestion. Was there communication between your mom that the person she saw in the first dream looked like the older you?
Oh, well, the long hair, you mean?
Yes. Well, yes. The long hair. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we all thought that was strange until, you know, the 70s or so. And long hair wasn't such a strange thing to have anymore for a grown man, you know, a 30-year-old man.
Sure. Wow. What a great story. I mean, has this changed about, having experienced this? Has it changed the way you think about life? And, you know, we tend to think of time like a beginning, middle, and end, and very linear. Has it kind of changed your thinking on things?
I'm not sure if it changed my thinking about the fabric of time and space. I know that it did influence the way that I saw my mom and the way that I think about things like premonitions in dreams, that sort of thing. Because I know at least the dream my mom had really did make her wake up and save my life. You know, that part is irrefutable.
Right.
And you read about that stuff happening. I know my mom one time saved my little sister. She was doing dishes and looked out in the front yard, and my little sister was playing with this dog, this big German Shepherd that had come from who knows where. And it was starting to get aggressive with her, and it was biting her dress and began to shake her back and forth. And my sister was under two at the time, you know, maybe two. And so mom ran out and my mom weighed 90 pounds. She wasn't a big person, but she ran out in the front yard and grabbed the German Shepherd's collar and literally threw it end over end across the road into the back of a pickup truck.
Wow.
So, you know, those are the kinds of things you think, well, that can't really, but that strength coming out of adrenaline, you know. So I do believe in those kinds of maternal enhancements, I guess you might call them.
Sure.
I'm not really sure. I do believe that time is not necessarily as we perceive it as a completely linear thing. And, current science tends to back that up, that time is something that we construct ourselves in terms of the way we experience it. So who knows?
Wow. That is fantastic. Well, Dave, I love the story. It really is food for thought and one of my favorite all-time campfire stories. So thank you so much for participating, for listening, and for sharing your story on the campfire.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by HelloFresh.com. We thank them so much for supporting our podcast and becoming a new sponsor. And HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. And I've had my own experience with HelloFresh. I'm going to tell you a little bit about that in a bit. But picture this. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions. Each recipe is designed to take about 30 minutes to make in your kitchen, and we've tested this here in the Harold kitchen, and that is an accurate description. And the recipes are configured in such a way that anyone can make a delicious and nutritious home-cooked meal, whether you're a fantastic cook and cook for yourself, or kind of like me, not so comfortable in the kitchen making home-cooked meals. Now, we're not talking about some stale kind of solution here. We're talking about the freshest ingredients sourced by HelloFresh. They're measured to the exact quantities needed, so there's no food waste. How many times have you made a meal at home and you've got these leftovers and you put them in the refrigerator and you're kind of like, well, we'll eat those tomorrow. You forget about them. You ended up throwing them away, wasting money, wasting food. No more guilt, no more waste in food and money. HelloFresh is the solution. And best of all, you don't have to go and to a shop and look for these separate ingredients. No, everything is delivered to your doorstep in a specially insulated box. Now, I've teamed up with HelloFresh, and they're offering everyone in the Campfire audience $35 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Campfire when you subscribe. Now, let me repeat that. You get $35 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com, HelloFresh.com, and use the offer code Campfire when you subscribe. Now, I have enjoyed the meals that HelloFresh sent to me. My family has enjoyed them. Now, a couple our family has enjoyed are the seared steak with cauliflower mash and green beans, and then the Tuscan pork linguine. Delicious. Fantastic. And the cool thing is that it's passed the test of every member of our family. Me, my wife, my two kids, we all enjoyed, and we're looking forward to our next HelloFresh package. And the best thing is, when you're in a situation, you have maybe two people working in the family, and you don't have a lot of time to cook. It's like, what am I going to cook? And then you end up maybe going out and getting something, fast food or something that's unhealthy. You can eat good meals, good quality food, cooked at home, doesn't take a lot of time. It's all measured out for you. I highly, highly recommend HelloFresh. HelloFresh, the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Check them out at HelloFresh.com. And don't forget to use the code Campfire to get $35 off when you subscribe. Thanks, HelloFresh.com. Megan is on the line from New England. Now, she has one of these comforting stories. I love these kind of stories because not everything we talk about on the Campfire is boo. Some of it can be very poignant and very reassuring. Megan, welcome to the program. And I know you're a fairly new listener, but thank you for sharing your story and tell us what happened.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Well, to kind of preface this story, I'll say that my family is split pretty evenly between people who are pretty receptive to the paranormal and people who aren't.
Okay.
My mom's family tends to be a little bit more on the sensitive side. They like to go see mediums. We're all pretty interested in the paranormal. And on my father's side, on the other hand, they're very by the book, religious conservative. They aren't receptive to anything paranormal because it's got a really negative connotation. So to kind of start the story, in 2005, my cousin Justin passed away at the age of 15 from a really sudden kind of heart condition.
Oh.
And he was with my father and I, and it was just like, kind of like a really traumatic experience.
Oh, of course.
Because it came out of nowhere. Yeah. So, you know, we kind of started dealing with this in our own way and really struggled with the grief of it. And, you know, about a year after his passing, I had this dream, this very, very, very vivid dream that he came into my parents' house and I was sitting there and he came up and hugged me and told me that he was okay. And, you know, to me, being kind of, you know, a little bit more on the, you know, I guess I would say sensitive side, I kind of had this sense of peace, like right off the bat, that I thought that he was coming through to me, and it was very exciting. But unfortunately, because he was a member of my father's side of the family, it wasn't something that I could really share with anybody, because they all had this belief that if Justin was coming through, it was because he was trapped in purgatory or, you know, something negative had happened to his spirit. And so it was just kind of something that I really kept to myself, despite the fact that it was very, very comforting. And the family kind of dealt with his loss in their own ways. And in the years following his passing, we all had memorial services. And kind of one of the cooler things that we all did was the whole family got matching tattoos, which incorporate the Superman emblem in place of his middle initial. And so the Superman emblem kind of became like a really big symbol in our family. So every time we see it, we associate it with Justin, and, you know, it kind of makes us happy. It was a, you know, kind of an inside comforting thing. So to continue the story, fast forward 5 years, and I was sitting in the middle of a college lecture, and I got a call from a member of my mother's family telling me that my cousin Erica had been in a terrible car accident. She was 18 and was put on life support.
Oh my.
And it became clear pretty quickly that she wasn't going to survive off of life support. And so her family picked a day to take her off of the support, which obviously is a terrible, terrible decision. Ugh. And, you know, we were all very sad about it. And so the night before she was scheduled to be taken off of life support, I kind of felt it in my heart. I was like devastated because she hadn't lost any friends. She hadn't lost her grandparents or anything. And so I just had this like really terrible feeling that she was going to be alone on the other side, that there wouldn't be anybody there to greet her once they took her off of life support. And so I kind of started praying, and I was asking Justin, who at this point had passed 5 years earlier, I just kind of started silently asking him to find her. I just wanted that kind of peace to know that they had been together. And so kind of that thought, that mental thought that he would find her on the other side, it kind of helped with her loss, because unfortunately she did end up passing when they took her off of life support. And, you know, that was kind of privately for me, even though I had nothing to verify that they had found each other, it still, you know, really kind of held on to that. And that gave me a lot of peace. And Erica's mother, having been on the more sensitive, the more kind of open side of the family, started really exploring her spirituality when Erica passed away. She went to church quite often. She spoke to mediums, and she was very honest about, you know, dealing with these various mediums, and would say, you know, that some people have gifts and most don't. You know, she was saying that she met several that she could tell just were really kind of pulling things out of thin air and really weren't giving her anything of substance. But there was one instance in particular that she went to a group reading, and pretty much immediately this gentleman, he started, you know, kind of validating things that made my aunt start to think that maybe it was Erica coming through. And so she, he continued to speak, and he's able to describe a painting that they had just put up in their house that morning that had been done in Erica's honor.
Wow.
And he was able to describe what Erica's urn looked like. She had been cremated, and her urn was pretty distinctive. So he was able to describe what that looked like and describe how it was arranged in their home. And, you know, there were other things. And he was able to give her the message that you know, Erica's passing, even though it had been a very difficult decision, he told my aunt that she had had both feet firmly on the other side and that she wasn't afraid or feeling pain, but that she knew that everybody was there, and she passed with a feeling of comfort. And so that was obviously very, very comforting for my aunt to hear. And she felt that it was legitimate because he was able to give her so much detail. So that in and of itself is wonderful, but the story gets more interesting because as soon as he finishes talking about Erica, he says, there's a young man here. And, you know, I mean, people were saying, oh, well, you know, I lost my son, I lost my brother. And they would give detail, and the medium would say, no, I don't think that's it. He says, you know, he's 15 or 16, and he's kind of impatient. He's wandering up and down the aisle here. And it still didn't really kind of resonate with anybody. And he stopped, and he turns around, and there's a whiteboard that he had been using to draw symbols or write words that he was getting, you know, from his spiritual guide that were supposed to be linked to people that he had coming through. And he turns around, and as he's describing this young man, he proceeds to draw the Superman emblem on the board.
Oh my.
And at first, it didn't really resonate with my aunt, but as soon as she got home, she started thinking about it, and she remembered when my cousin Justin had passed, how, you know, our entire family had gotten the Superman emblem tattooed because that was our symbol for him. And she started thinking that, you know, maybe he had come through as well. And so she told me this story, and I immediately was completely covered in chills because I remembered, you know, praying that Justin would find Erica on the other side. And you have this medium verify so much about Erica and then mention that there was this young man who was with her and was very impatient, and to, you know, associate the Superman S with him.
Yes.
I mean, it really...
that was the clincher.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it could have been a series of just really amazing coincidences, but, you know, for me, it really... it felt very special. And, you know, even if it was a series of amazing coincidences, it gave me so much peace to think that they would have found each other on the other side.
That's a fantastic story. Megan, thank you so much for sharing it. I'm glad it was able to help you get some peace. And that's why I say, when people say, oh, this paranormal stuff, this supernatural stuff, it's all frivolous. It doesn't amount to much of anything. I think it provides many people comfort, as it did in your case. And thank you for being so kind to share your story tonight on The Campfire.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Sherry is on the line from Pennsylvania. She found us from first the Paranormal Report, the show that I do with Micah Hanks. And she's going to tell us about some strange going-ons in her home. She says a place has a history. She's going to tell us about it. Sherry, welcome to the program. Tell us what happened.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. First of all, a little background. I live in a very old coal mining town. And, I mean, there's been books written about it, you know, a couple of them, as a matter of fact, when there were just horse and buggies and dirt roads. The main road that I live off of, the main highway, was actually owned. Most of the houses were owned by big coal mine owners.
Okay.
Like the Painted Lady houses, and, you know, right. The old Victorians are big and they're beautiful. Anyway, the house that I live in now, I moved into about 8 years ago with my boss. I'm a home health aide, and, you know, I'm a living companion also. I cook, clean, take care of everything. Basically, it was his mother's house, and she died here. She died of a heart attack here. But before her, there was also a nephew, her grandson, that lived with them. And he committed suicide in the bedroom down the hallway from me.
Oh, my.
Yeah. It was sad. It was very, very sad. He was a nice kid. He really was. Had some problems, but we all do. Anyway, I've been touched, you know, while in the shower, in the bathroom. And that's right next to the room where, you know, Michael had committed suicide. We always joke, you know, my boss and I, Gabe, we always joke that because the cabinet doors open, you'll hear them open in the kitchen. And,
wow.
You know, they'll be open, you know, they'll stay open. And we laugh that it's mom or, you know, Mike, you know, catching a snack, you know, in the middle of the night, because they were both snackers in the middle of the night, you know, like us all. And we hear noises, you know, the dogs will sit there and look at the stairs, you know, and start barking. And it's just, it's really weird. It's really weird. Things go missing, turn up in the strangest places. Like I lost keys one time and I found them in the refrigerator.
Oh my. So it sounds like these ghosts.
Hey, I was like, hey, that's cool.
So it sounds like these ghosts might have a little bit of a mischievous streak.
Yeah. Well, Michael was a bit of a joker. He was a bit of a joker. He really was. He would go and mess, you know, with his uncle's hair, you know, just to, you know, tick him off a little bit, you know, and do it again until he pushed it too far. But there's also been incidences where, you know, I've had my legs pulled, I mean, by the ankles.
Oh,
like
my.
Somebody was, like, pulling me out of bed, you know, just as I was falling. And I'm not talking one time. I'm talking, like, 2-3 times in a row. And I'll sit there and I'll start to yell, you know, Mike, knock it off. I'm trying to go to sleep. But anyway, this is going back, probably it was right before Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
Okay? I was upstairs in my room, you know, like I said, I'm a home health aide. I live in, you know, with my boss. I work 24/7. I take care of all his needs. Now, but he's an incomplete quadriplegic, that's why. But I was tired as heck, and I was laying in bed, and we have 4 dogs. We have 2 teacup Yorkies and their son, who is a standard size Yorkie. He was the only one born. Yeah, I said he absorbed the rest of the puppies.
Oh my.
But he sleeps in the bed with me at night. He's the only one that's allowed upstairs, you know, because he doesn't have accidents. The other ones are older and, you know, they have accidents.
Sure. So
BB's allowed to come and sleep with me. Well, there's also been times where I have felt a dog or somebody sit on the bed, like behind me or next to me, and I'll turn around and there's nothing there. You know, and I'm like, oh, okay, it's Mike again, you know. But I was laying in bed, trying to fall asleep, and I have a garment bag on the back of my door. And when you open and close the door, you hear it, you know, the air will catch it and it'll clack, you know, the zipper will hit
right.
The back of the door. Well, as I'm falling asleep, I'm thinking, I'm hearing the door is going clack, 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 and I'm thinking it's the dog.
Right.
You know, scratching its behind or something, hitting the door. And I'm like, baby, knock it off. I'm trying to fall asleep. And I'm still hearing it. It's going clack, clack. There's no draft. There's, you know, no wind in the room whatsoever because I'm in the middle of the hallway. And I'm like, all right, something is trying to get my attention here. And I open my eyes and I see nothing but a torso.
Oh, my.
No head. Yeah, no head. You saw the body. You saw the arms. No hands and no legs. It was just torso. But this torso was like a light green color. I could see I have like a little garment stand. It's like a little chest of drawers where I keep my unmentionables,
mm-hmm.
socks, you know, underwear and stuff.
Right.
And I could see right through the torso, you know, I mean, you know, to the chest of drawers. And I'm laying in bed and I'm looking and I'm going, am I seeing, what am I seeing? Wait a minute. I was just trying to fall asleep. You know, maybe I'm dreaming. And the door is still going clack, clack, clack. I screamed like a little girl, pulled the covers over my head
oh my.
And yelled, God help me.
I don't blame you.
Gabe is downstairs and he heard me. That's how loud I screamed. And he's like, oh my God, are you okay? And I flew down the stairs without my robe. This will tell you how frightened I was. And this is not the first experience I've had, but this was so unnerving. I did. And when I hit the bottom of the stairs, I hit the wall.
Oh, my.
Banged my head, fell on my behind on the very last step, and nearly rolled down the last 3 steps, hitting the gate, you know, that keeps the dogs out of the second floor. Gabe looks at me. He's like, are you all right? I'm like, you are not
going to believe what I just saw. He goes, I don't think I want to know. He goes, was Michael being mischievous? I said, I don't think it was Mike, because Mike was a big guy. He was a very, very tall and, you know, heavy set guy. I mean, he was young, you know, when he passed away, but this body looked like that of a child.
Huh.
You could tell, like an adolescent boy, you know. It was not a very developed chest, you know, I'd say like maybe 13, 14 years old.
Right.
And I'm curious. I have a highly analytical mind. I have to dig into things. I have to dig. I have to check. I have to see. And knowing that this town is so old, but the house that we live in really isn't that old. I mean, I believe it was built in the late 60s, early 70s.
Oh, that's not old, no.
No, it's not old at all. But you have to remember, the town here is very, very old. It's an old coal mining town. We have little, what they call patch towns that aren't even on the map, that were just, you know, the towns were just brought up because of coal mining workers.
My dad actually came from a coal mining town in West Virginia, and it was one of those company towns with company-built houses, and now there's only maybe two or three houses left, and it was, 70, 80 years ago, 90 years ago, it was a thriving community.
Yes, yes, the same thing here. It was the same thing here. I don't know if you've ever heard of a town called Jim Thorpe, in Pennsylvania, where they have the handprint on the jail wall.
No, I did not.
No, the Molly Maguires. Never heard of the Molly Maguires?
Yes, I have.
Well, that's where they held the Molly Maguire trials when they blew up the railroad.
Yes.
And people were accused of, I forgot their names, but it's in the books that I buy here for the town.
Now, how do you feel about all of this? I mean, obviously you listen to these programs, so you have an interest. How do you feel not only being interested in it, but living amongst it?
I've been living amongst it all my life. Like I said, this is not my first experience, but most of my experiences have been fairly positive. I can only say that this is like maybe my second or third like negative, you know, experience. It's very unnerving to me because I still see things. I was just seeing things in the room last night, and you know, you catch things at the corner of your eye. You know, I'll see a face in the doorway, like peeking around the door, and when I go to look, it's gone.
Oh my.
You know, and I wonder, you know, is it this child, you know, is it this boy that I saw, you know, is he looking, or is it Michael, you know, is he just, you know, like, you know, coming back when he was happy, you know, before he committed right. suicide, because, you know, he was very depressed at the time. And I mean, of course, you know, I mean, obviously he took his own life. So I really don't understand it. I really don't. I mean, the house, like I said, hasn't been here very long, but you know, the town's history, you know, some of it's positive, a lot of it negative because of the coal mining history. You know, they weren't treated very well,
right.
the miners.
Right.
You know, so I'm wondering, you know, was there a home here where, you know, one of the workers lived and, you know, a child, you know, had passed at a young age, or is it Michael? You know, coming back, because I had somebody had told me that the color green mm-hmm. is not a good color to see.
Mm.
It's the color of death. It's the color of death. Well, your body turns green when you start to decompose.
Right.
You know, when you first die, you turn purple, and then, you know, well, blue, then purple, and then green as you decompose. But seeing a green, you know, something green is supposed to be not. Good. It's supposed to be not a good thing. So, you know, I'm going to be digging, you know, and trying to learn a little more history, you know, on the land, you know, what was here before, you know.
Well, Sherry, I'll tell you, quite the experience.
Yeah, I could live without the experience.
Well,
thank you.
even though it's a bit scary, thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for calling us and telling it.
Well, thank you for having me, Tim. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Kelsey from North Carolina, a new listener, a member of our virtual campfire group. And she is going to tell us about working in some mansions that were, of all things, haunted. Imagine that. Kelsey, welcome to the program, and tell us what happened.
Tim, so I
worked at these two hotels that my boss owned, both of them. One was built in 1856 and the other was built in 1887. So the one that was built in 1887 was, it was a restaurant, it had a hotel, and my boss lived on top. The other one, she was going to start renovating, and so she didn't really have a lot of people over there, and she sent me over there to clean because I was a maid. So I went over there, and I went with another maid. Her name was Claudia, and she was Spanish, so she didn't speak really good English. She would just tell me all the time, "Kelsey, I'm scared to go over there." And I was like, "Okay, well, I'll go with you." We go over there, and instantly, I just have this feeling of dread come over me, and I look around, and she has these like Bible verses in Spanish written down all over our work area. So that kind of gave me an uneasy feeling. So I was cleaning one of the rooms, and I very vividly hear like people moving around in the next room. It sounds like they're moving furniture. And I go in the next room. Absolutely no one's there. This happened every day. There was one time I was cleaning, and it was a room that was right next to the staircase. And the staircase, you know, it's an old house, so you can hear when someone's coming up it.
Right.
And I heard what sounded like someone coming up the stairs, and I figured it was Claudia. And I was just like, "Claudia," and I turn around, like, out to the staircase, and no one's out there. About 20 minutes pass by, and I hear someone come up the stairs again, and I look, and it's actually Claudia, and I was like, "Did you just come up the staircase?" And she was like, "No, I've been downstairs folding laundry for a good 45 minutes. The next thing that happened was, it happened to my brother.
Mm-hmm.
It was the same mansion. They would host murder mysteries there, like Friday and Saturday nights, like little dinner parties. And my brother would host them, and he would close up the mansion when they were done. So my brother, he's locking all the doors, turning all the lights off, and he goes down this hallway, and he looks down the hallway back at that staircase I was telling you about, and he sees like a person, and they look like they're wearing a suit and a top hat, which was common for the murder mystery. So my brother just assumed that it was this, like, you know, a guest that had just been astray. And my brother starts walking towards them, and is like, "Oh, I'm sorry, we're closing down for the night. I just locked all the doors." And as he's walking towards this person, he realizes he can see through them. They're transparent. So my brother, he was friends with some of the actors in the murder mystery, and he goes to call them. He takes his cell phone out, and mind you, his cell phone was charging all night long while he was working. He picked up his cell phone, and it was completely dead. And as he like realized, I'm like, "Oh my God," like, you know, he's realizing that when spirits like to show themselves, they drain energy out of things. And as I was realizing this, he hears someone whisper in his ear, "Hello."
Ooh.
And yep. So my brother hightails it outside, and he was like, "You couldn't pay me to go back in there."
I don't blame him.
Yeah.
I don't blame him. I do these shows, but I'm chicken.
Right, yeah. I know. So I was just like telling my boss, I was like, "I really don't want to go over there anymore. I just get bad vibes when I'm over there." And my boss was like, "You know what? Like, either you do it or I'm not paying you." And I was like, "Okay." So I was over there alone, of course, one day. And I'm finishing up and closing everything. And there was this door that, like,
it was weird because you had to lift this door over like a hatch and lock it because she didn't have time to put in like a proper door because she was renovating everything. She just didn't want anyone going back in this area. So I was putting this door on the hatch, and as I'm lifting it up to put it on there, the door slams down as if someone is purposely throwing the door like on me.
Oh my.
And it lands on my foot. And I like literally like kind of shuddered in pain, was like, ah. And I like am trying to pull this door off of me, and it just feels like the world's strongest person is holding this door down on my foot.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So as I'm sitting there struggling, it was probably a good minute of me trying to get this door off and realizing what is happening. And I just let out like a please stop. And instantly I lifted that door off my foot. I threw the door aside, ran around to that staircase, and as I ran past the staircase, I saw in the dining room a man who was transparent wearing a top hat.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Yeah. So I was like, no way. I am never going back there again. And so I told my boss, I was just like, something bad happened to me. I got injured. And my boss was just like, okay, like, fine. Don't have to go back there. So a couple months passed by, and my boss calls me one day and is like, you need to come here right now. And I was like, why? What's wrong? And she's like, please just come here. I need you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. This whole time, my boss is a huge skeptic. She's just like, oh, if there are ghosts, they're friendly, you know? And I was like, yeah, friendly ghosts that try to hurt me.
Right.
I go there and I see what's wrong with her. And she's like, I hear what sounds like the sound a smoke alarm makes when the battery is low.
Right.
And it continuously beeps. So, and I'm like, and she's like, I keep hearing this noise, but I have no idea where it's coming from. And as I'm listening, I hear like, it sounds like the beep is coming through all different parts of the basement. And this was still a really old home. She was renovating it. Like I said, like she didn't have like anything up to date. And so there was no working smoke alarms in this basement. So, and I'm like trying to find this noise, and it's literally coming from like one corner to another corner, to another corner, to another corner. Like it was not an echo because the sound would produce from like different areas of the ceiling, and there was no smoke alarms. So finally I found an old smoke alarm in a garbage can that was in a room that the sound was not coming from at all. And as I picked up the smoke alarm, it stopped beeping.
Huh.
Yeah.
So this place was obviously there were some folks there, that like to pester people.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It was, apparently the man who built the mansion was a doctor. He was like this renowned doctor who, when soldiers got injured, like really badly in war and they had to get like amputated, they would come to this man and he would do it because he was such a wonderful doctor. So, but a lot of people died in that house because sometimes, you know, the surgeries just, they couldn't make it through. And the doctor's son died in that house. So there's a lot of bad energy going on in that house. One little story I'll tell you before I finish again. One of the events manager, when they first started renovating that house, she brought her 8-year-old son there. And the son was like, I want to go look in the attic. And at the time, my friend, the events manager, was pregnant. So she was, and the stairs to the attic were really steep. So she was like, I will stay at the bottom of the stairs and you can go to the top, but you have to stay where I can see you because there was a street shot.
Right.
So her son goes up the stairs And she tells me, when she's telling the story, that her son got up to the top and just stood frozen, like he was freaked out. And she was like, "What's wrong?" And he went down the stairs as fast as he could without hurting himself. And he was like, "Mom, there's a man up there, and he's not cool."
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess not. Was he wearing a top hat? Might be the question. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't remember that. Yeah, I know. But I feel as if this man was some kind of shadow person.
Oh, man.
Like, that's after from the, what I listened to on your podcast and some other podcasts I've heard, this is the most accurate description, I would say.
Well, I got to tell you, quite a story. And we certainly appreciate you sharing it here on the Campfire. And thank you for listening. And again, telling us this spooky story about haunted mansions.
Thank you, Jim, so much.
Tabitha's on the line. She's been listening for about 6 months. She's from Iowa, and she has a story about a decade ago back or so about a UFO sighting and the aftermath of it. Tabitha, thank you for joining us today and for listening, and tell us about this sighting and everything that happened afterwards.
Thank you, Jen. It's really a pleasure to be able to talk to somebody or a group of people in the audience that might believe you. Back in October, it was between the 4th and 9th. It was homecoming week at University of Northern Iowa back in 2004. My sister had called me and said she needed some money. She was going out for homecoming. And the place she was going, she said, it will cost me $5 if I get in before 11. If I get in after 11, it's going to be 15. So I'm just taking her some money up. So around 7 o'clock, I head to a little neighboring town here to Cedar Rapids, pick up my friend, and we hit the highway headed to Cedar Falls right about 7:30. Now, Cedar Falls from Cedar Rapids is about an hour, maybe hour and 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So as I get off on the exit, I kind of realize this is the wrong exit. I end up in the middle of a cornfield, and I have a stop sign. The cross traffic does not, and I can see the Unidome in the distance. If I were to use my fingers, it'd probably be about 3 inches tall or so. So I'm like, shoot, we took the wrong exit. And now I had a CD player that was kind of rigged up janky, and so it would get really hot. So I had taken the CD player face off to let it cool off. And as I did that, I'm looking up at the sky, and I said, oh, look, maybe a shooting star. And as we watch it, because I don't see that many shooting stars, it's kind of like a neat thing to see. So I'm like, oh, look, a shooting star. And it starts coming down right when I say that. And it comes down directly towards us. And we're sitting at a stop sign. And kitty corner to the stop sign is, you know, a cornfield. And it comes straight down into the cornfield, and right before it comes down, it's a big blue diamond, and it looks like it's formed of like glass, and it's like this excellent blue, so bright, like a light watery blue, and it's really smooth. It's taller than it is wide, and the edges weren't really diamond, weren't pointy; they were more rounded off.
Wow!
And so it comes down, and goes into the corn, and we look at each other, and she says, that wasn't a shooting star. I was like, no, it wasn't. Now, I had taken my CD player off because it gets really hot because of the way it was hooked up, probably improperly. So I asked her what time it was. And after seeing something like that, I'm assuming that wouldn't be somebody's first question, what time is it? But for some reason, I said, what time is it? She said, she looked at her phone and said, 8:51. I remember that specifically. And that would make sense because we left about 7:30-ish. So we have to go straight. I can see the Unidome from where we're sitting straight ahead. It's about 3 inches tall off in the distance if you were to use your fingers to size it. And I say landed because there wasn't a boom. There wasn't an explosion. There wasn't any noise. It was like it landed. So I have to go straight to get to the Unidome. So I start driving, and I just had to look to the left where I had to. I tried not to. I had to. So I look to the left, and the top of the corn is just like illuminated in a large area with this really light blue color. So I'm driving, and it was like immediately I started feeling all these, it was like I was really excited, and then I was like scared, and then I just felt all these emotions at once. And I keep driving and driving, and I don't remember talking to Mindy. I don't remember us saying anything about it. All I remember is being like, what the heck? What the heck? I used a different word, but I'm like, we're not getting any closer. We're not getting any closer. We're not getting any closer. I just remember saying that over and over as I'm staring at the Unidome. I almost feel like something was projected in front of me. Like it knew I was going to the Unidome. And so I had the picture of the Unidome in front of me. And so next thing I know, it felt like forever. Next thing I know, I'm at a stoplight. The street name started with a W. I take a left, I take a right. My sister's dorm is right next to the Unidome. Take a left, take a right. I'm at the Unidome right by her dorm. And I call her. She comes down and she's all, has an attitude. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? I brought you some money. You know, you're acting like you got an attitude with me. She's like, well, I was trying to get there before 11, so I could only pay $5. Now I have to pay the 15. And I didn't think about it at that point in time. But when I asked Mindy what time it was, when we saw it, she said 8:51. And then to get to something we could see, the Unidome, we got there 10 minutes to 11. That's 2 hours to get to something that you're staring at.
Oh, my. So, wow. So the timing didn't make sense.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I was literally driving straight for obviously what was 2 hours at something I was looking at. And, you know, when I really think back on it, I don't remember, like, when we made the ride home back to Cedar Rapids, I don't remember talking to Mindy. You would think if after seeing something like that, we'd be talking about it. And, oh, my God, this is crazy. Oh, we didn't talk about anything. I don't remember saying anything. I hardly remember the trip home. The only thing I remember was the next day, Mindy had called me and said that her boyfriend was really upset because she didn't get back till after midnight. And we left at 7:30. He was expecting her a couple hours later, you know.
Wow.
So it was just so weird. And I mean, for a while, I was just terrified. Like, I didn't want to go to the bathroom at work. I felt like someone was going to grab me from under the stall. And I didn't want to look in my mirrors when I was at home. I just felt like I was going to see something behind me in the mirror. I was just, like, terrified for months. And, you know, finally I kind of got over it. I would tell people about it, like, hey, if I disappear, just so you know, I saw this a few months ago. But it was just a really crazy experience. And the following, you know, few years, and it was really strange because it would be October of the next following years. I had moved to a new place, and my friend and her mother were sitting in the front seat of a car. We were parked. I was in the back seat, and all of a sudden, the whole car lit up from what seemed like from the center console. It just lit up for, like, probably 7 whole seconds. And then went away. We're all sitting there, like staring. And then once she said, am I tripping? And then her mom's like, I thought I was tripping. I'm like, I thought I was tripping. We really just thought the car just lit up. And it's nighttime.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My dad, and you may or may not have heard that since you're a fairly new listener, but very early on in the show, I had my dad on the show, who had a UFO sighting, I guess you would call it, with my mom, who unfortunately has passed. And one of the things they recounted from that experience was they were in a secluded area and the whole car lit up in the middle of night where you could literally, they said you could read the numbers on the speedometer.
Yes. Yes, this is crazy. And, you know, I've read things about like watchers, like flashes and things like that. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, watching me. And, you know, and there was another instance, it was also in October the following year. So this would have been 2005. I was in my bathroom getting ready for work. I'm in the shower and my fuse had blown in the bathroom. And it was too early for me to call the landlord and get it fixed. So I'm just taking a shower in the dark while the whole bathroom lights up. And it lasts for several seconds and then it goes away. And I know I saw this huge flash of light. I still have the spots in my eyes, you know. I got ready, so I jumped out of that shower, got ready so fast, I was at work like 2 hours early. I had to get out of there.
Oh, my.
And in that same bathroom, one of my friends was over. It was about 3:00 in the morning, and she was in there brushing her teeth. She comes flying out of the bathroom, just shaken, pitch white. And she's like, I saw a face in your window. She's like, I looked over and I figured, oh, it was just somebody in the parking lot that just happened to look over and was right there. She said, but then I realized how high up your bathroom window was. You would have to, you know, have a ladder to get up to my window or something like that. And then even higher. And
right.
She said, she was like, there was no neck. There was no hair. It was just like a face and really big dark eyes. And she's like, I hardly even saw a mouth. It was just two big eyes and just cheekbones and a head floating.
Oh my Lord.
I mean, she was terrified. So I've had so many things happen. I will probably use up all your airtime if I told all my stories, but that's one that I always wanted to tell to an audience of people that may have a chance of believing me.
Well, I think that many people believe you, and you're not wasting our airtime. That's what we ask you to do, to come on and share your story. And Tabitha, we're so glad that you did. Thank you for your time today. And thanks for being a part of the campfire.
Thank you.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that campfire as much as I did. I thought we had some great stories this week. I hope that you'll tell yours. Of course, there's always our virtual campfire group on Facebook. That's growing by leaps and bounds. We have over 4,000 active members there just in a couple months. I hope you'll check it out. That's absolutely free. And then also, if you want to come on the show, which I highly suggest, go over to jimherald.com/campfire to sign up at a convenient time, and we will have you as a part of the program, and we'd be most appreciative. We're also most appreciative to our new sponsor, HelloFresh.com. Be sure to go over and check out what they have going on. It is a neat service, which I am enjoying, and I think you will too. And make sure when you go over to HelloFresh.com, use that campfire code. The code again is campfire, and get $35 off your first week. What a deal! I hope you'll take advantage of it. And thank you for listening to The Campfire. We'll talk to you next time. And as always, stay spooky. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.